Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello and welcome to Freedom of Species, the show that brings animal advocacy to the airways of 3CR Community Radio. You just heard Sally with Out of the Pan, who was debunking a nonsense bill from the Nationals Party about trans people, and also discussed a recent report on LGBTQIA elder abuse. Sally just finished with the song Never by Wilson Dixon. So I'm Lottie, and today I'm hosted by Nick.
Hello.
And Hayden.
Hello.
So today we're going to be talking about vegan stereotypes, what people might often get wrong or right about vegans, and what this tells us about the animal rights movement. This kind of topic was inspired by a previous discussion that we had here on Freedom of Species about the Sounds Like a Cult podcast by Amanda Montell and Issa Medina. We were talking about their episode, The Cult of Veganism, with the guest Lauren Toyota. So we did that episode with Nick and Katie. In that episode, in the Sounds Like a Cult episode, I thought that the hosts and guests talked about vegans in stereotypes quite a bit. I thought some of the tropes they used were a little bit confused or conflated. And that just kind of sparked this kind of, this topic in my mind. So the guest, Lauren Toyota, in that episode is a vegan, and she is like a food influencer online. And in this podcast episode, she clearly really wanted to distance herself from what she called like hardcore vegans, like Peter, I think she said, like, let people who let rats out of labs, and then wanted to show, this is a quote, "I'm a cool vegan, I'm not a crazy person, I'm not screaming at you." So I thought in the show today we'd go through some different vegan stereotypes we've kind of come across, the three of us as vegans, and some of these stereotypes come from non-vegans and then others come from the, like, vegans ourselves. And then just have a discussion from there.
Yeah, I did want to mention as well that Lottie is now I told Sally that Lottie is now a regular host of Freedom of Species, and Sally said there's no regular host at 3CR, there's just awesome hosts.
But hell yeah.
Lottie is now an awesome host on, but yeah, you already hear from Lottie quite a bit, but you'll be hearing from her more coming up. And another note, if anyone wants to text in with any stereotypes about vegans, or any comments on the show, if you're listening live, the number to text in is 0488 809 855. One more time, 0488 809 855.
Yeah, so thanks, Nick. And it's great to be a host now. I thought we'd just kind of go through some vegan stereotypes, maybe do like two or three at a time that we think of, just give a short explanation of what this stereotype kind of, what it means. So, one I wanted to start off with is the preachy vegan. So this is one where if someone describes someone as a preachy vegan, they're probably a little disgruntled that this person thinks that everyone should be vegan. They make being vegan their whole personality. Then maybe like slightly similar, but I think different in some ways, is like the militant vegan. And so this is someone who, again, probably thinks everyone should be vegan, but essentially they don't tolerate any slip-ups in veganism. You need to be totally pure, and there's no kind of leeway in how you are as a vegan.
Right, so the militant vegan's probably a bit more focused on people who are vegan in terms of...
Maybe, or people who,
Or is the preachy one focused that they're on vegan, non-vegans and trying to convert people, maybe?
Yeah, something like that. Did you want to describe any, Hayden? stereotypes? Am I putting you on the spot?
My favorite one's the soy boy. I like to identify as a soy boy. So, I think that's one that is probably one of the more prevalent ones now because it's used as an insult by people on the right towards, not necessarily vegans, but kind of males who are progressive. But it kind of started applying to vegans and still I think has the implications of it's an insult because you're a vegan and that's why you're a soy boy.
And so you're like emasculated.
Yes, so the idea is that you're very feminine, you're not macho at all, you don't have any of the like typical aspects of masculinity. Ostensibly it's based on this pseudoscience that if you eat a lot of soy your estrogen levels will skyrocket and you'll become a woman essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nick, do you have any favorites?
Favorite stereotypes? I guess one that comes to mind, and actually Adam, who was a previous host on the show, reached out to him, and that's one that comes to mind for me is the live and let live vegan.
Yeah.
Or what Adam said, live and let humans live, I guess, because it kind of takes the animals out of the equation. But just like, yeah, I'm vegan, but everyone can do what they want. It's just purely a personal decision.
Yeah.
That's one that comes to mind for me.
Yeah. I would label that like a cool vegan or a pick me vegan.
Yeah.
And they're like,
don't
rock
the boat.
It's not my whole personality. It's just a personal choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not like the other vegans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not like the other vegans. I'm not like the other girls.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Any others you guys wanted to call out? Oh, not call out, but name. Another one for me is like the bleeding heart. So I think this, again, would come from non-vegans, but kind of denigrating someone for being too emotional and kind of implying that they can't handle the reality of the world and where our food comes from. And that just kind of makes them immature and, childish.
Yeah. There might be overlap with other ones, but I think one maybe that you raised as well was the influencer or celebrity vegan as well. Could be another.
Yeah. So I think these are people who are maybe a bit more focused on their aesthetic, maybe a kind of curated Instagram aesthetic sometimes.
And it's like veganism is a trend.
Yeah, seems more trendy, probably more of a focus on just the food itself and or health, maybe.
I feel like it can even be with like the influencer types, kind of like spiritual aspects to it as well, right?
I
agree. It could be like spirituality, but I guess I would also associate that quite a lot with like consumerism too, like promoting the right products and those kind of things, and buying like maybe expensive like vegan products or eco products and those kind of things.
I think so. I think for me, like the vegan influencer and the spiritual vegan are like closely related, but like slightly different archetypes in my mind of like a different kind of aesthetic that they're going for.
Yeah,
maybe.
I guess I was talking about like spirituality in the sense of them being like, like since I've been vegan, I've just been like so zenned out or whatever. Selling it as a brand almost in the spiritual way.
I'm not taking that negative energy, which I think there was something along those lines in Christspiracy actually. You're taking on that suffering and stuff, and I just don't know if that's necessarily true. Like I've heard it said a lot, but I just don't know if there's obviously, there's health impacts from eating different foods and from eating animal products and, certain ones more than others, et cetera. But I just don't think I'm not aware of any evidence to just suggest that like taking on the pain of the animals you eat actually has an impact on your health.
Oh, I think according to Australia's recommended dietary intake guidelines, like an ounce of meat has 1,000% of your recommended dietary intake of suffering.
Yeah. So I've got to keep up with the guidelines.
I think
Do we want to as well talk about spirituality, the granola kind of hippie
So I think that kind of overlaps for me with like the spiritual vegan.
Which could be an influencer
say more
as well
about that if
they
you
could
want.
Be an influencer. Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's like one of the I feel like we might have talked about this before on the show, but I feel like a lot of those people have kind of switched into the right wing now and it's less of a vegan thing. But I feel like within the, like if you go 20 years ago, that's probably along with like the kind of preachy vegan, the main stereotype is the like people who aren't really science based and like they might be like raw food vegans, and they'll be white people with dreadlocks or braids.
They might live in a van.
They might live in a van. They probably don't believe in soap. And I feel like you'll see that satirized a lot, or probably punched down at in like TV shows, especially like sitcoms from like the 90s or 2000s.
Yes, there's a vegan, they're probably from that time period. Yeah. That's probably how they would have been portrayed.
They're probably a mix of the preachy and the hippie vegan.
Yeah,
and I agree. We've probably moved away from that stereotype a bit in terms of that same person today might be into RFK and might be like going out of their way to show that they're eating. At like, I'm just thinking like one example is Russell Brand, who is a long-term vegan and has recently come out as like, no, I'm not vegan. It was like he's had this right-wing pivot, and it didn't make sense for him to be vegan in this kind of far right space he's gone into. And then like, yeah, he's finally come out and gone, no, I'm into eating animals and all this kind of stuff, which kind of makes sense. So yeah, there's been that right wing shift from the hippies, which doesn't tie well with veganism.
Yes. Yeah. maybe just a few honourable mentions. The hypocritical vegan, so coming from non-vegans is, oh, well, they're vegan, but they drive a car. They still shop at Amazon, things like that. The effective altruist vegan, this is someone who's overly logical and rational. They won't show any emotion, and they're all about the numbers in reducing the number of animals that are killed. The health or sports vegan, so someone who uses a vegan diet to really optimize their health and has like a big focus on strength and fitness, and showing that the vegan diet contributes to their strength. So I think that these stereotypes kind of reflect features that differ between different vegans. So for example, to what extent a vegan is focused on food only versus animal liberation versus total liberation, so justice for all living beings. Vegans who are vegan for health or wellness reasons or maybe spiritual reasons versus those who are vegan for environmental reasons or those vegan for animal rights or a combination. The distinction between people who think that veganism is just like a personal choice, it doesn't really affect anyone, doesn't matter if anyone else is vegan, versus people who think that basically everyone should be vegan, vegans who make it their whole personality, others who don't, people who are very strict about being, you know, as vegan as possible, as reducing animal consumption as much as possible, versus people who think it's okay to be a bit more laissez-faire, either for their own standards or like in the kind of standards they set for other people. Spiritual versus evidence-based, or like emotional versus more reasoned and logical. Do you think that covers most of it? Were there other kind of things that...
Yeah, I think the only other one that comes to mind, which is probably a fairly common one, is the new vegan, which is another one that Adam mentioned. I think that probably has a lot of crossover with the preachy vegan as well.
Yep.
Like the first time, like when you first come vegan, of like wow, I'd never thought about this and wanting to share that, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe like other vegans, like older vegans are going to notice that stereotype a bit more too, because they'll think like, yeah, I've been thinking about this for years. You've only just come to this realization. But
yeah.
Well, actually, that just, I think, something I encounter in online vegan spaces, which you just remind me of, is probably the jaded vegan. I don't know if that's a stereotype, but it's definitely something I see a lot of people who have been vegan for a long time and just become very disillusioned with the world. And I think it's kind of like the opposite to what you're saying with the new vegan, whereas I feel like people kind of might have that like wow moment for them when they like kind of have encountered this information that makes them change their perspective, and they're like, oh, I'm going to be vegan now. And they're like, oh, if everyone just found out the same thing I did, then the world would change. Yeah. And then they find out like, oh, no, most people know and don't care. And like, I think for a lot of people that can lead to them becoming very jaded, very frustrated, and feeling alienated from the world, and just very disenchanted with humans.
Yeah, like misanthropic is what I was going to say. Like,
I guess that's a more hopeful place to be of like, I never knew this. Now I do know and I've changed my behavior. Everyone will. Yeah. Whereas it's like, yeah, I've had conversations with so many people over the years and they haven't switched. And so it's like, well, what do we do then?
Yeah, I've had those conversations where someone agrees with every point you make. And then you're like, oh, so you're going to go vegan. They're like, no, I'm not going to change anything. And you're like, oh, okay. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
And I feel like as well, like, I think that one is funny because I don't think any non-vegan would even be aware probably that vegans are like that, that there's so many vegans who are like so jaded and just like, I hate everyone and I hate everything. Like, so I think that would purely be something that vegans are aware of within the community.
Yes. Might keep that for our vegan friends more than the general public.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably, I guess, a dimension as well of vegan stereotypes is like you've got the external ones, like ones that are coming from non-vegans, and then internal ones that might be coming from vegans themselves.
Yes.
Or things that you notice as a vegan versus things that are put upon you by external parties.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's not just, like, not even just the thing of stereotypes of, like, how much vegans are kind of reaching out to interacting with non-vegans versus how much, like, kind of being insular within vegan communities as well, I think relates to some of those stereotypes too.
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely. So I think we'll go to a song now. So we're going to start with the song Can't Win by Pup. This isn't about veganism, but it's kind of about... yeah, I guess you picked this one, Hayden. It's
I suggested it. I just think if we were doing it about vegan stereotypes, just because the song's about not being able to win, and I think it's a good approach to veganism. No matter how we do it, people will be like, oh, you're bad in this way, you're bad in this way, you know, like, so no matter how we approach veganism for non-vegans, you know, we can't win.
Yep.
Freedom of Species would like to thank Project Fresh Start for their financial support of this program. Project Fresh Start provides free plant-based food to the community, with a focus on providing healthy, fresh plant-based food and education around healthy eating and living in a way that sustains the individual, the community, the animals, and the planet. To find out more about our community lunches and programs, check out projectfreshstart.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species 3CR Community Radio. Today we're discussing vegan stereotypes. So first, jumping back into the discussion, I'm going to explain a theory of attitude change that I came across that I think is relevant to how we think about stereotypes. So there'll be a bit of I'll use some technical terms, but hopefully not too much. Hopefully it'll be understandable to everyone. So just to name the theory itself, it's called the elaboration likelihood model. But basically this is just a model of attitude change from social psychology. This isn't my area. So this is just something I've come across, from, you know, my interests. The theory is that when people are being persuaded, to put things simply, will take one or two routes in kind of how they take in the information that they're given at a given time. So some people will scrutinize the information deeply. In the theory, this is called the central processing route. So, you know, for example, when we apply this to animal activism, someone might take in the fact that every year 86 billion land animals are slaughtered for food. They might consider that, you know what, veganism is doable for me, and more ethical to eat vegan than not. I think for us who are vegans already, that kind of seems like a no-brainer, and it's sometimes difficult to understand why people don't respond in that way when they're given the facts. But according to this theory, the other group of people, and these are people who are less motivated, less interested, or less able to pay attention to the facts in that given moment when they're presented with this information, they're going to use more superficial or stereotypical cues to inform their attitudes. And then, the technical term for this is the peripheral processing route, so central versus peripheral processing. So people who are taking this route, they might, you know, inform, they might update their opinions based on the attractiveness of the person giving them the information, their charisma, the fact that they're a celebrity, for example, just the length or quantity of information as opposed to the substance of the information itself, or the emotional appeal. So, you know, if they are made to feel kind of, well, if they in they see someone's anger, you know, righteous anger at the way animals are treated, they might just internalize that as like, oh, I don't really like seeing that emotion. I'm kind of taking that in as like judgment, and I'm not really going to take this on. I'm perceiving this as an unpleasant experience, and that's going to inform what I think of this like movement. Fortunately, people who kind of who scrutinize the information more deeply, this approach is expected to have longer lasting attitude changes, and so it's more stable than people who just kind of rely on stereotypes and superficial cues. But these superficial cues, this group, people who kind of rely on them, this is still kind of significant to informing public attitudes. So I think that kind of that resonates to me as how
I'll just jump in and give an example of how prevalent that is, which is just that in political elections, you can generally predict the winner of an election just by asking people, like a big sample of people, which candidate is more attractive, and the more attractive candidate tends to win every single time.
Yep.
And there's been several, like, even recent Australian prime ministers who have had, like, makeovers. Like, I know Anthony Albanese, like, lost a lot of weight and kind of had this, like, makeover. I think, I'm trying to think of, like, there was definitely others, but, yeah, Albanese was one where it's like, yeah, like, that shouldn't matter. But the society as it is right now does matter.
That's how most people make their decision making. They're like, do they look like someone that I would trust to be the leader? Okay, that's how I'm making my decision. And they may not even think about it that way. But yeah, because most people are using the peripheral processing rather than actually thinking deeply about it.
Yeah.
I think that attractiveness definitely relates to veganism as well, in that, like, there's like PETA is one example, but there's so many examples where it's like, it's pretty much saying, like, not saying this directly, but underlying it is, like, you can be vegan and still reach the ideal body type based on your gender, basically, right? Like, you can be, like, a thin, conventionally attractive woman. You can be, like, a strong, like, conventionally attractive man and still be vegan, which is true. But then at the same time, as you mentioned, that's less likely to be, like, lead to long-term change. And I think, like, the reason behind that, or one reason could be, it's like, yeah, but she also fits the ideal body type. She's not vegan. And so this guy is also like this buff guy and he's not vegan. So yes, you can reach it as a vegan, but also you can do it. Yeah, you can also reach it as a non-vegan as well. Like there's plenty of non-vegans who also like fit these narrow sort of body ideal types as well. So it doesn't really make sense as an argument for veganism.
It's
not the only way.
So yeah, I think kind of bring it back to these vegan stereotypes, I guess the way I think about it is that, like, you know, if I think, you know, I kind of need to accept, and maybe other vegans might choose to do the same, that, like, no one vegan is going to please everyone. And if I'm kind of stereotyped as, like, a preachy vegan by some people who in that moment are using just peripheral cues and not really able to, like, take in my messaging, some other person that I'm talking to might be, like, willing to actually, like, deeply engage with what I'm saying. And, you know, I might be able to change attitudes that way. And so, yeah, I think it, you know, maybe it will take the pressure off a little bit trying to be, like, the perfect vegan that is going to be, like, optimal for every single person in terms of changing their attitudes.
Yeah, and I'd also like to bring in, like, so that's, this is more coming from psychology, is that right? Social psychology? Yeah, like, I guess to bring in a sociology, I think, like, that psychological thing stuff is important too, but if I think of people who, like, have gone vegan because of things I've said, like, there is that psychological thing, but I think also it's, like, are the people around them vegan or supportive of veganism? Like, some people who have gone vegan after hearing what I've said, like, maybe they were, like, lifelong vegetarians and their parents were vegetarians and they've gone vegan, so it's like it's not rocking the boat too much socially.
Yeah.
It wasn't Hayden or something.
Everyone's looking at me.
but was an example like that where it's like you're not like your social circles
are
not
the only person who has influence in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's like you're more like the influence someone who by becoming vegan like is not like rocking the boat too much in their social circle. So if someone is like someone who's like their social circle is very not just not vegan but very hostile to veganism, which tends to be the case in like people who have more like far right and discriminatory attitudes towards humans, like far right views, they're likely to be more hostile towards the idea of veganism as well, as opposed to someone like a more socially progressive friendship network, for example. So it all depends on those social things too, I think.
For sure. So I think
just trying not to put myself out of a job as a sociologist.
I think like maybe the takeaway we can take as vegans is that like I said, we don't need to please everyone. We live in a system of an ecology of other activists and influences as well, but maybe on the like day-to-day like personal level, you know, you could try and meet a person where they seem to be in that moment. Like, so do they seem like they're ready to engage deeply with an issue? If they seem like they're probably just going to rely on stereotypical cues, superficial cues, you can maybe just let that lie for, and you know, you can let yourself, you know, take it easy on yourself for not converting that person who probably was never going to, really be willing to engage.
Yeah, I mean, I guess on that, you know, with Nick talking before about, like, for instance, Peter's advertising, like, oh, you can be a vegan and you can still be muscular, for instance. I think there is value in that in terms of being aware of and publicly challenging negative vegan stereotypes, because it kind of inhibits that peripheral processing. So let's say the stereotype's very accessible that like, let's say the soy boy one, that if you're a vegan man, you're going to be weak and effeminate, and you're talking to a man who is a very, very typical man in the sense that they don't want to be a weak and effeminate person. That's very threatening to them. If they have this easily accessible stereotype that vegan men are by definition weak and effeminate, then when you talk to them about veganism, they might immediately shut that down because that's an easily accessible stereotype. And so they're just like, well, I couldn't consider veganism because I don't want to be weak and effeminate. So I think there is value in terms of challenging some of these negative stereotypes so that they're not as easily accessible, so that there are counter narratives. So if someone thinks vegan man, they don't think weak effeminate. They just think, oh, same as other men, right? And, like, obviously we can't do that with all stereotypes, because some things, like, for instance, like being a preachy vegan, that's just you challenging people and making them consider, is what I'm doing bad, which no one likes. And so they're like, well, you're the problem, not me. But I think there is value in challenging some of these stereotypes that are just more, like, negative stereotypes that get put on vegans, to challenge these kind of automatic ways people have of processing vegan arguments.
Yeah, I did have something on that. Do you mind a tangent? Or no, I just... maybe we're going to finish with a song. It kind of reminded me of that, because the lyrics are, my skinny arms strong enough to pick any fruit you want. That's the Soy Boy song we'll finish with today. And it kind of, that song reminded me of, there's a show my partner's been very obsessed with lately, Off Campus. I don't know if either of you heard about it. It's an ice hockey romance TV show. And my partner shared on Reddit of like one of the main actors in the show, and he was talking about like a more respectful version of masculinity promoted in the show, and talking about consent and these kind of issues. And someone replied to the comment, oh, it's really great that this really like buff guy can be saying this stuff, basically about like being more respectful towards women and stuff like that. And she was like, you're kind of missing the point that like this is only acceptable like if it's from a man like who's got like a six pack and is really built and is playing an ice hockey player on the show and that kind of thing. It's like, there's some truth to it, but it's like, it's kind of like saying like, oh, it's so great this like buff guy is vegan, but it's like, it kind of implies that if you're not a buff guy, like your veganism is less legitimate as well, which kind of feeds back into that sort of like dominant masculinity in itself.
Yeah. I think we should probably still encourage the buff guys to to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But we probably shouldn't normalize that they're kind of put on a pedestal because they're an attractive or a strong or buff guy or whatever, that their opinion matters more. And I think people are just going to continue to do that. But if we want to, if we care about social justice, we probably shouldn't be encouraging at least that kind of behavior.
A point about feminism or veganism or whatever,
whatever it is
not only legitimate if it's coming from a man who fits that ideal body type.
And you might, I just was going to say, like, you might internally be like, oh, that's good that this guy who normally wouldn't be making this kind of argument is making this argument. Some new people might listen to them. But, yeah, we should all still be listening to diverse. We should be listening to diverse voices.
And I think, it like, part of it, like, yes, you can put those people on a pedestal, but also it's kind of like counter-narratives, because it might be that, like, oh, I hear about, like, consent and stuff like that very frequently from guys who might look like Nick and I, who aren't, like, big, big buff guys who look really macho. And so hearing it from someone who kind of fits a different ideal and appeals to a different slice of demographics, I think there's some value in celebrating that. Because, like, you know, if you get the, like, let's say, more normie kind of guys who are really into regular masculinity, and then their role models are starting to be like, well, consent's really important and you should respect women and stuff like that.
That will have an effect.
And that's really good. So I think, like, there is an extent to which, like, you know, like, soy boys like us, we already have role models who we look at and they say these things and we already have internalized that. But for, like, a different slice of the, like, the demographics, a different slice of masculinity, there are people who haven't got those role models, and they might, it might be really important to them that their role model is someone who is big and buff and manly, like, you know, like, plays sports, whatever, and then to have them saying this stuff, it's from a perspective where they can be like, oh, that's someone I can look up to, because that's, like, my kind of masculinity. And, you know, it's, I think it's good to challenge those kind of deeper things, but it's also good to have examples for them that they can take from who are giving positive messages.
I agree. I think we'll go to the next song.
Sure.
Now, so next we're going to play the song Baby Rats by MU330. I'm not sure. And this kind of lovingly depicts a social justice warrior vegan stereotype.
Freedom of Species thanks Animal Free Science Advocacy for their financial support of this program. Animal Free Science Advocacy works to create a future where no animals are harmed in the name of science, and scientific progress is advanced through animal-free research methods. Become a member today by visiting animalfreesci.org.au. That's animalfreesci.org.au.
Welcome back to Freedom of Species, 3CR Community Radio. Today we're talking about vegan stereotypes. So I'm going to jump back in with, explaining a couple of new concepts that I think will also help how we kind of think about vegan stereotypes. So these are diversity of tactics and the radical flank effect. Both of these social phenomena came about after being informed by the civil rights movement in the USA. So the idea of diversity of tactics is that having a diversity of tactics is beneficial and maybe even necessary for a social justice cause. Radical flank effect maybe kind of fits into that a little bit, where that's the idea that radical factions of a social movement are kind of expected to influence more moderate factions of that same group. there can be maybe positive or negative effects of radical flanks. But there is evidence that positive radical flank effects are widespread.
Can I maybe give an example of that?
Yeah.
This is from 2019. There was the Dominion Animal Liberation disruption, where basically vegan protesters, animal liberation protesters, shut down Swanson and Flinders Street in the city. It was a big thing, lots of discussion about it. And then soon after, I saw in the Australian Financial Review an article, "Vegans Are Taking Over the World," which is actually a really positive article about veganism and negative article about the protests themselves. And the article featured a bunch of people we'd probably call more sort of pick me or let and live vegans. Like, so they had one person who says, like, you know, I believe, you know, animal agriculture has a big impact on the environment. But this person prefers attracting people to veganism by showing it in a positive light, both in real life and on Instagram, doesn't endorse the approach taken by protesters. I understand their passion when it comes to disrupting the public. I think some of them went over the top. The best way to promote that veganism is a great way of living is just to lead by example. And so there was lots of examples like that of people, like, basically vegans in the article slagging off the protesters, but this article only appeared because of the protests in the first place. So it's kind of after that we had this sort of like good vegan and bad vegan, but like that sort of like pick me vegan or live and let vegan became like a middle ground position and kind of became more accepted because we don't want those bad vegans. But the fact that veganism in any way was good was kind of a new thing, I think.
Exactly. I think that's really relevant. And from a bit of searching of, like, the research, this research field of radical flank effects, it seems that research is still, like, pretty scarce, but we can kind of learn from previous social justice movements. So it does seem that across animal rights, climate movements, things like that, there's evidence for positive radical flank effects beyond just, you know, this example that you gave.
I think even like Black Lives Matter would be another example where it was like once there was those protests and people were seeing, like, you know, even more militant aspects of the protest, that idea of like taking a knee at the sporting events, like that was controversial at first. And then after the protest, it kind of be like, oh, some of those protests are too bad, but like just taking a knee is kind of a middle ground. We got to accept that. That became done as like a formal part of a lot of sporting events after that.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole Black civil rights movement in the USA, like the kind of face of that movement now is MLK and the kind of like peaceful movement where they did marches, they did everything non-violently, but they worked hand in hand with more militant aspects of the civil rights movement, like Malcolm X, the Nation of Islam, the Black Panthers, and they saw both avenues as being really important. And it's less disruptive to society. It's easier for them to tolerate, like, they didn't like either of them, but it's easier to stomach, like, MLK and non-violent approaches when there's also the really radical kind of, like, more militant approaches. And so that was, like, having both was a key part towards greater civil rights for Black people in America.
Yeah, so like Malcolm X made Martin Luther King more acceptable, basically.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
it's like, we really don't want that, so we'll take this. Kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And it was actually Herbert Haynes, an American sociologist, coined the term positive radical flank effect based on his research finding that factions fronted by Martin Luther King Jr. received record high financial contributions following riots involving the movement's comparatively militant faction. So that's really like the original example of where that came about. And yeah, it seems like the research that's available continues to kind of show that having a more radical flank is positive for a movement. It seems a little less clear cut when we're talking when it comes to violent tactics. And by that, I mean tactics where people get hurt. Some people will consider like property damage violence, but I think there should be a distinction. And so yeah, violent tactics and maybe a little bit more at risk of creating negative flank, negative radical flank effects. However, when the it seems like when the moderate factions distance themselves from that violence, that might help to avoid that negative effect and create more of a positive radical flank effect, where you're, if you distance yourself from violence, your part of the movement is probably going to get more support from the general public. So yeah, tying it back to these vegan stereotypes, I think, you know, the more moderate or live and let live vegans, like you said, Nick, are going to be more palatable for some people, maybe many people. But there is evidence that we also need the more radical, militant, preachy social justice vegans. And so, yeah, and yeah, bringing it back to the Sounds Like a Cult episode I was talking about, this has kind of made me think, well, maybe it was actually strategic, not sure if it was intentional, but for the guest in that one, Lauren Toyota, to have kind of stereotyped, distanced herself from militant vegans in that way. You know, I'm not sure, but, you know, it is what it is. That's what she did. I don't think she was harmful. I don't think she, like, painted a harmful picture of veganism overall. And it kind of, I take it a little personally when people are against stereotypes of veganism that I relate to a little bit more, but it's kind of reassuring to know that, you know, this is actually a phenomenon where the more preachy, radical people are necessary to a movement, but part of that is also just the reality that moderates are going to distance themselves from that to some extent. But that does seem to have overall a positive effect. I think there are kind of, there are exceptions where the more moderate faction is not even fighting for the same thing that we're fighting for. So, you know, I don't want to paint it all with the same brush. But, yeah, I think that's kind of what I... what I concluded from kind of reading up on all this.
I mean, I feel like with that a bit though, there's a kind of pick me or cool vegans. Like, I feel like that stereotype of preachy vegans is used to encourage people to be like that, to kind of silence vegans.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you don't want, no, everyone hates the preachy vegans. And I think we're probably all at some stage in our journey towards being vegan had that. Like, I definitely had it as a vegetarian where, you know, I would do to other people, oh, yeah, I'm vegetarian, but don't, I'd never be like one of those vegans, you know, like, they're crazy. Because, like, people, I feel like, put that out there so they don't have to be challenged. Because it's, if you make it like, oh, it's really cool for the ones who just, who never question me and just go along with anything I do. But it sucks if you're someone who actually, like, gets upset about things that are upsetting. I feel like that's used as kind of a weapon to silence the vegan movement.
I guess I just mean, you know, if you're a preachy vegan, stay preachy. But the reality is that, you know, not everyone's going to like it. But I think you're still
an important part of the movement. Don't be put off by the fact that people negatively characterize preachy vegans.
And I guess, like, the pick me vegan, like, on that podcast, it sounds like a cult one, like, or the ones in the Financial Review article who are, like, both, like, slagging off the more radical vegans. Like, yeah, again, as we've kind of touched on, I feel like they, like, they're able to present themselves as a pick me vegan because of the radical vegans. Like, like, without the radical vegans, then it's just like, oh, you're just a vegan. That's weird. That's against the norm. That's challenging what I'm doing. And then these people are kind of challenging what people are doing less, but still being vegan. That becomes more acceptable because at least you're not this. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I guess maybe just in the last few minutes, I wanted to get everyone's thoughts on, like, what types of diversity in the vegan movement in terms of, like, these stereotypes or these kind of different features of vegans we talked about. Like, what diversity do we think we should encourage in the vegan movement? What maybe can we just tolerate? And then what aspects do we think kind of cross a line where that's not the kind of veganism we're kind of willing to tolerate?
Yeah.
Do you have anyone have any thoughts you want to jump in with?
Or maybe I could finish off kind of related, but maybe two thoughts on the preachy vegans, I guess. I guess, I can't remember if I've done this on the show before, but let's go Hayden. Hayden, do you prefer chocolate mousse or cheesecake?
Cheesecake.
Cheesecake. But it'll be weird of you to go around advocating everyone eat cheesecake because you prefer it, right? That'd be weird. You just go on and eat cheesecake. I feel like that is why people are against preachy vegans. They're, well, you like eating that way. You can eat that way. Why do you care what I eat? And like totally ignoring the fact that there's animals involved as well, which is why we're preachy. I guess like this show, even doing this show puts us into the preachy vegan camp, right? So it's like, yes, there is a preachiness, but it's not just because we want people to eat like us. It's like there's someone else involved, which I think often is left out. Like, why would you care? Like, why are you preachy or whatever? But I would say from the preachy side, I guess one caution is I think sometimes veganism, vegans, preachy vegans can act as though they've got nothing to learn from non-vegans. Like, here's this one thing, I'm right on this issue, and I just got to tell everyone to do that. But it's like, as a vegan, I do think it is the right thing to do, but also you could learn from other people, including people who are not vegan, about trans issues, about Indigenous issues, about sustainable transport, about all other issues. So not purely seeing the world through that one lens, I think, is also important as someone who's promoting veganism. Yeah. That's not really what you're asking, but
No, I think that's an important point. And the things that I brought up today were from like social psychology, civil rights movement. I think we have to learn from all different kinds of people
not acting like I've got this one source of truth and I just got to share it. Like I can learn things from others as well.
Definitely.
Well, I would just say on stereotypes, something I've found that it doesn't have a lot of relevance to the animal rights movement, but probably has a lot of personal relevance to me, is that in terms of restaurants, if you see a restaurant that's run by the kind of preachy, very animal rights focused and very alternative vegans, you know they're going to have amazing food. Whereas then if you go to one of the ones which is like the hippie or the health vegans or the trendy vegans, you're like, oh God, this food's going to be bullshit and it's not going to be edible. So I just want to shout out to all the like cool anarchist alternative kind of vegans. Preachy vegans who actually know what good food is, and thank them for their service to humanity.
Yeah,
totally. And animals as well.
Yes. Animals. Yeah.
Well, maybe all under even, the to the
maybe
world.
Even more importantly, animals.
Yeah, but I mean, that's definitely one of those things as a vegan I've noticed in terms of like the stereotypes of if I walk into a restaurant and I feel like that's like 99% accurate, I can tell how the food's going to be by looking at the people who run the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that checks out. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it before, but I think it checks out.
Like, if I go into a restaurant and it's a vegan one and the people have a bunch of piercings and tattoos and there's animal rights messaging up everywhere, I'm like, oh, this is going to be the best meal of my life. If I go in and it's a white person with dreadlocks, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be unseasoned slop.
So should we wrap up?
About now. Yeah, well, we mentioned maybe the email as well. So if you have any feedback, the email is fozradio@proton.me. If anyone has contacted the old Gmail, that will still go through to us, and you can check out our summer special that Lottie kind of ran a while back for why we switched across. We can also give us feedback on any social media as well.
Maybe just a very quick wrap up. I think a takeaway from this show is, maybe if you're new to animal rights or you're not a vegan, maybe if you're a future vegan, if you're maybe in the more moderate category, I think from this discussion, I encourage that, you know, any steps for animals, however small, is still positive for the movement. And then maybe the takeaway for more radical, preachy vegans, probably like us, is that more radical activism still seems to make a positive difference long term. We should accept that, you know, there's going to be diversity of tactics in the movement, but we're all hopefully working towards the key aim of animal liberation. Yeah.
For those jaded vegans out there, keep
on keeping
on, you know?
Yeah,
for the misanthropes out there. You're making a difference even if you don't see it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, yeah, time to wrap up. The final song, which we've kind of mentioned, is Soy Boy by Jupa Davala, and this song reclaims the soy boy stereotype. Thanks for listening.
And stay tuned for Rotations for some more music coming up from a range of different hosts on 3CR. Thanks for putting everything together today, Lottie.
Yeah, thanks. And thanks for coming, Hayden.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. Bye.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.